This is Central Time. It's no secret that a lot of the world's governments are struggling in some ways, from partisan gridlock to bureaucratic dysfunction. Serious problems are being left on the table. It seems sometimes like world leaders can't get anything done about them. Our next guest says there's a solution. The leaders of our cities are the perfect candidates, he says, to solve the world's most pressing problems, and they've got a track record of getting things done. Joining us now is Benjamin Barber. He's a research scholar at the City University of New York. He's the author of If Mayors Ruled the World, Dysfunctional Nations, Rising Cities. Benjamin, welcome to Central Time.
Nice to be with you in Central Time.
Your book, If Mayors Ruled the World, you say actually some of what you're looking for is already happening. A lot of mayors are taking on a leadership role that doesn't stop at their borders. Can you talk about how the role of mayor has changed recently?
Well, what's happened, just a quick little background here for your listeners, because it's really important to understand that for 400 or 500 years, the nation state has been the central instrument of our policies, how we govern ourselves, the center of democracy, and these independent, bordered, sovereign states are the center of popular sovereignty, the basis for the League of Nations, the Concert of Nations, the United Nations, all of the world, financial organizations like the World Bank and the WTO, they're all based on nation states. So we've lived for really 500 years in a world of nation states, and kids who take political science or civics all learn about American government or French government or Japanese government. So, you know, I'm really making a fairly bold and audacious claim by saying it's time to change the subject and stop talking about nation states. And there are two reasons I'm suggesting that. One is because states have become so extraordinarily dysfunctional, not just in the immediate sense of Washington, you know, closing down or Italy having a corrupt prime minister for so long, or Greek government not really functioning in the face of austerity, but in a deeper sense because nation states defined by sovereignty and independence simply aren't very good at dealing with the 21st century world of interdependence. All the problems we face, think about it, are cross-border problems. Ecological change, climate change, that's a global problem. It's global warming. It's not Milwaukee warming that we face. World Wide Web, the technology is worldwide. Markets are worldwide. Terrorism is worldwide. Immigration is a worldwide problem. The new pandemics are not, you know, you don't worry about flu in Madison, Wisconsin. You worry about the Mexican pig virus or the West Nile virus or Hong Kong flu. Almost every problem we face in the 21st century is an interdependent cross-border problem. And here we are with 17th century nation-state institutions that deal exclusively with problems inside their own borders. And that's just a deep misfit to the challenges of the time. And what I'm arguing in the book is that if we change the subject, if we stop focusing on nation-states and begin thinking again about cities, where civilization and democracy began a millennia ago, in fact, we find that cities are confronting not just their own problems, but working together global problems, that cities are doing what nation states can't and don't, that mayors as pragmatists are solving problems that seem to defeat prime ministers and presidents.
And that's part of your argument, that mayors can't really be so ideological, they can't be so partisan, they have to make sure the garbage is collected, the traffic runs, and that problems get solved on a daily basis. Do you think that's part of what gives them a better seat to solve the problems you're talking about?
It is. You know, we just, a month or so ago, we watched the government in Washington, D.C. close down. I mean, America, the United States of America kind of closed its government. Now, that was extraordinary for two reasons, that it happened at all, but it was also extraordinary because life went on. Some people were hurt by it, some people suffered, but for the most part, life went on. As Mayor Nutter said a couple of years ago in Philadelphia, the mayor of Philadelphia, he said, we could never get away with the crap here in Philadelphia that they do in Washington. We can't close Philadelphia. I mean, think about it. Think about closing Milwaukee or closing Detroit or closing New York. You can't close a city. That would mean what? No schools, no hospitals, no subways, no buses, no taxis, no firemen, no police. You just can't do it. Cities are the warp and woof of politics. They're where the rubber hits the road. They're where real problems are confronted. And that's why mayors can't afford to be ideologues. They can't stand on principle. They can't say, well, we'll just wait for a year and see whether the hospitals are going to have public unions or not, and meanwhile, we'll just close the hospitals. You know, you can't do that. You got to make things work. So mayors everywhere tend to be much more pragmatic. Many of them don't even identify with party government. We know Mayor Bloomberg in New York started as a Democrat, then he was a Republican, became an independent, in the end just doesn't talk about it, because party really isn't very important when it comes to keeping the buses running, keeping the hospitals open, picking up the garbage, getting the snow plowed, and so forth. Those are practical problems, and mayors are above all pragmatists. They know how to solve problems, they know how to make things work, and that's actually what we want from our politicians.
But as you write in your book, a lot of people are suspicious of cities. They think of cities and they think of words like dysfunctional, crime. They look at places like Detroit filing bankruptcy, the high murder rate in Chicago. And that's, we're just talking cities in the United States there. Do cities function that well? Do mayors work that well that we should be looking to them for leadership?
Well, two things. You know, I learned a long time ago the relevant question is always as compared to what? So, you know, are cities corrupt? Are their mayors sometimes out of control, like our friend Rob Ford up in Toronto? Do they have problems? Do they have crime and so on? Of course they do. You know, the human frailty, human vice doesn't stop at City Hall. Cities have it as much as anywhere else. But the question is, how do they function in dealing with all the challenges of corruption and crime and so on that they face? And the record is everywhere, not just in the United States, but around the world, that in fact they have a much better record. They have to really have that record of dealing realistically with problems. I mean, let's take immigration, for example. You look at the politicians in Washington who have been screwing around for years without getting a new immigration policy passed. And in effect, they're saying, well, therefore, anyone who comes into America without a visa, without a pass, is here illegally, and in effect, for all practical legal purposes of United States jurisdiction, they don't exist. Then you take the mayor of Milwaukee, you take the mayor of Chicago, or the mayor of New York, and say, well, now what are we going to do about the reality that maybe they don't exist to the federal government, but in the United States there are 12 million undocumented workers who are here, and their kids are here, and they're in our cities. Do we not allow them in the hospitals, or do we? Do we not allow them in the schools, or do we? Do we try to register them so we can follow them in terms of crime and drugs and so forth? Do we permit them to have jobs? Do we even give them a driver's license at the state level in order to make sure that they're legal and they can be tracked? The reality of mayors is you have to deal with the reality of immigrants. National politicians can sit there and posture and grandstand about whether they think immigrants should be here or not, but the reality is they are here, and it's in cities and with mayors that you have to deal, first of all, with reality. I know of no mayor, whether it's Hamburg, Germany, or Seoul, Korea, or Los Angeles, Mayor Garcetti, the mayor of Los Angeles, who isn't confronted with the problem of not should they be here, but how do we deal with them since, in fact, they are here.
We're talking with Benjamin Barber. He's making the case that mayors should take a leadership role in solving many of the world's problems. His new book is If Mayors Ruled the World. What do you think about the ideas you're hearing? Do you think big city mayors, big city leaders, should take a leadership role in solving things like climate change, poverty, disease, and more? Give a call, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email talk@wpr.org. We'll pick up the conversation with a look at the idea of a world parliament of mayors. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation now with Benjamin Barber about the role mayors, he says, should play in the national and international political scene. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. His new book is If Mayors Ruled the World. One of your audacious suggestions is the idea of a global parliament of mayors. What would that look like?
Well, we had a League of Nations, never worked very well. We've had a United Nations. It should better be called the Disunited Nations, you know, with vetoes in the Security Council to prevent it from ever really acting on security issues, and a talkathon General Assembly that is so divided and so on that nothing happens. So although it's got some good agencies to try to do a little good work, the fact is the United Nations doesn't work either. We have no global governance to take on the global problems of climate change, of global pandemics, of crime and drugs and terrorism that we face. And it's not just I'm suggesting that mayors could and should convene in a parliament, there are already dozens of international and intercity associations most people have never heard of. There's an organization called United Cities and Local Governments, UCLG. I call it the most important organization in the world nobody's ever heard of, because it's got 3,000 or 4,000 cities in it. They meet every year. They examine best practices. They share what they're doing, and they create cooperative associations together. An organization like ICLE, the International Environmental Concerns of Local Government, and the C40, an organization started by Mayor Bloomberg and Bill Clinton and a bunch of other mayors, including the mayor of Toronto back then, Miller, is an organization that works among cities to develop climate change proposals, greening up a port, insulating city buildings, bike share programs, pedestrian programs, above ground rapid transit bus lanes with dedicated lanes where other cars and so on can't go in them. And those are all ideas that have been developed through cities cooperating together, and they've had a profound impact on, for example, climate change. 80% of carbon emissions come from cities, which means that whether or not states want to act, and as we've seen since Copenhagen, they don't and haven't, and most recently at Warsaw, they came home again having admitted they could do nothing, but cities are acting. And the port of Los Angeles was cleaned up by Mayor Villaraigosa, and about half of the port emissions ceased, since 40% of L.A.'s port city emissions come from the port. That was about a fifth of the carbon emissions of L.A. that the mayor cured. So cities are meeting together and can. My proposal for a global parliament is to put a kind of keystone in the arch of intercity associations that already exist, the literally dozens and dozens of city networks around the world where cities cooperate, but a parliament of mayors constituted by cities around the world would allow that convening of important city politicians and councilmen and representing their citizens to have a genuine impact on global public opinion, to share their best practices and work together to address the problems that nation states have proven they really are not very good at addressing anymore.
You know, it seems like the strength of a mayor is that they're there. They're connected to their local community. When they go and meet, does a mayor of New York and a mayor of Mumbai and Seoul and Rio de Janeiro, do they really have that much in common where they can share these ideas in a meaningful way?
Well, that's a great question, because we think from the point of view of cultural differences and geographical differences, you know, cities are very different. It's true. There's some, you know, Wisconsin and Kansas have a lot of towns between, say, 5,000 and 50,000 or 100,000. And then there are places like Germany or France that have much larger cities. And then we have these mega cities of 20 or 30 million in Latin America and in Africa. So cities are very different. But here's the reality, and here's what mayors discover when they meet together. Urban transport, whether you build for billions of dollars an underground subway, or for 5% of that cost, a rapid transit system above ground. The idea of bike share programs that make bikes available to the public and introduce bicycles into places that never had them. These are ideas that work on every continent around the world and have been shared. Every single mayor faces the problem of local crime, of drugs, of illegal immigration, of pickup of garbage and how you do that. In other words, urban problems are common despite the great diversity of cities across the world. And when mayors meet, they very quickly discover they have the same problems, and they can often share, not identical solutions, but share approaches that fit their particular challenges and their particular size and so on. So the reality has been, and this is why, as I say, I'm not saying let's for the first time have mayors meet. Mayors have been meeting and meet a lot all the time, and all I'm suggesting is that we maybe put a keystone in the arch of these organizations by having a parliament of mayors that, like the United Nations, but for cities, allows them to share at the highest level their practices and to opt into common practices that work around the world and provide an alternative voice to the disunited nations and the contentious nation states and the rival nations that set peoples against one another. I mean, the other reality is that nation states are monocultural. You know, they're Japanese, they're French, they're English, they're German. Cities are multicultural. They're diverse, and they reflect the diversity of the world, and that's true of cities everywhere.
One challenge I would see is that the cities, in some ways, their hands are tied in the United States, maybe by the state government or by a federal, a national government elsewhere. Do they really have that much latitude of action?
Well, you're right, and that's a great point, and one of the great challenges that we need to take on is the challenge of cities subsidiary to provinces and national states, where they don't have the freedom, the autonomy, the jurisdiction, and the resources to meet the problems that they're capable of meeting. But remember something. Cities generate 80% of GDP. They're responsible in almost every country in the world for the majority of taxes. The problem is they don't get back the resources they create. You know, we've seen the Tea Party argue that lazy welfare people in the city are spending their taxes that are taxed in the rural regions. The reality is just the opposite. Cities contribute far more to the rural regions and to the country at large than the rural regions of the city and the country contribute back to cities. This has been the problem also of jurisdiction. You talked about Detroit earlier. You know, Detroit is bankrupt, but the Detroit that's bankrupt is the 19th century Detroit, the very narrow 19th century boundaries. While that narrow Detroit went from 2 million to 700,000 in the last 20 years, the 10 counties around Detroit that make up the greater Detroit metropolitan region went from 3 to 5 million and have become the number 4 new economy zone in the United States and are doing extremely well. And if the greater Detroit metropolitan region was identical with the actual Detroit city limits where they tax and so on and have all those problems, you'd see a much more successful form of governance. And that's true in many parts of America. When you're talking about cities, you're talking about metropolitan regions, and the metropolitan regions are what succeed. But as you said in your question, right now we're organized so that cities are defined narrowly, their resources are largely taken away from them, and they don't have the wherewithal to do the things that they're capable of doing. And that has to become a political battle. We need an urban party that will fight for the rights of cities, the jurisdiction of cities, and the autonomy of cities, relatively speaking, to do the things they can do. And that's, again, where cities working together and citizens cooperating with the other citizens can make a big difference. If Milwaukee cooperates with Detroit and Cleveland and Louisville and other citizens and Chicago and so on, I bet they will find they're in a position to begin to increase their autonomy and jurisdictional authority within Illinois and Wisconsin and Kentucky and Ohio in ways that will be useful to the majority. Remember, the majority of people in the world live in cities, 75% of Americans live in cities, and yet cities don't really exercise majority control. And in a real democratic majority, majoritarian system, cities ought to, in fact, have the right to govern themselves.
And that's part of your vision here, not just that cities cooperate and share ideas, but that they unionize, sort of, to pull their political muscle to bear?
That's exactly right. And I think of an urban, we have Democrats and Republicans and Tories and socialists and liberals and conservatives, but what we need is an urban party, a party that brings together the more than half of the world's population that live in cities to represent urban common interests, urban public interests that turn out to be universal interests. One of the reasons people in cities fight very hard to control climate change is that people in cities, as New Orleans and New York, have learned, are the first to suffer. 90% of the world's cities are on water, lakes, rivers, or oceans. And it's people who live in cities who, first of all, will deal with the consequences of ocean rise. So, yes, cities have a great deal in common, and there should be a common urban party fighting for the rights of urban people. And that kind of a party in the United States, I think, would be far more successful than a Democratic or a Republican party.
We'll leave it there, Benjamin. Thank you so much for joining us today. Appreciate
thanks a lot. Sorry, Buck, so much.
That's okay. Benjamin Barber is the author of If Mayors Ruled the World, Dysfunctional Nations, Rising Cities.